Hello, welcome to the Autocar podcast, My Week in Cars, with Matt Pryor over here and over there on the other side of the desk, Steve Cropley. Where are we today, Stephen?
We're in the bowels of Polestar, aren't we, at Bicester Heritage, because because you came from there and I came from here, and this seemed like a good place to meet, didn't it?
You're after this, you're hanging around for a bit to go and see the people from here and have a little whiz around the circuit, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm stealing some power because I've got a new Audi SQ8.
Oh, have you? Is that your new long-term wagon for a month or two?
It is, yeah. Yes. And I've arrived with a only a tickle left. To do a few laps, I need to steal some Polestar juice and put it in an Audi. So they're obligingly... I mean, a man said to me, let me do it for you.
That is
what a fine fella.
Well, so I have been here before. This is Polestar's unit in Bicester.
Yeah.
It's basically a showroom. They run test drives out of here, but they don't sell technically cars from here, as I've just found out. They're not FCA rated, so they can't flog you a car or fine or anything else. But they can say, well, here's the car. We'll tell you all about it. And if you want to buy one, this is the bit of the website you need to go to and do the stuff. And I think my understanding is people quite like that sort of low pressure environment.
Yeah.
Because they can't sell you a car. They just go, well, this is what it's like.
Yeah, I think it works. I've been here with the steering committee twice into this, just as used it as a showroom.
Yeah.
And there have been some nice people to explain the, you know, it's things like seat materials that you get quite keen on and wheel styles and stuff. And they can show you all that. I must say, I see the appeal.
Yeah.
It's the only missing link for me is, and it may have not be missing anymore, but there is the trade-in problem. You know, most people arrive with some smoking swap,
That is a fair point, yes. It's all very well adding up the finance somewhere on a new one, but you want somebody to have a look at the old one and go...
Yeah, suck the teeth.
That's worth less than you think it is.
but it's always been important to me to get rid. Anyway, I'm sure they can do something because there are Volvo dealerships associated, aren't there? So
yeah. We've got a letter, Steve, from Jamie Fretwell, who works for Mercedes-Benz Trucks in the UK.
Okay.
Just picking up on something that Andy Palmer said in our live pod the other week, because Andy said, we're not going to have battery-powered 44-ton trucks. We're just not. Jamie says... there are already electric HGVs on UK roads, from light-duty wagons to 19-ton trucks in London. Truck journalists have driven our 27-ton rigid more than 300 mile on a single charge. We've got 27-ton electric bin wagon, there is a 40-ton e-Actros. Daimler Truck has a dual truck strategy, so battery electric for short haul and hydrogen-based drives for long haul. But he was a bit... taking issue slightly with Andy saying there won't be 44-ton BEVs. I would give Andy the benefit of the doubt and say what I think he probably means is, if you've got a truck that is like the ones laden with cars that go up and down the M40
at
Southampton, and they're pushing 44 tons fully laden as they are, you don't have somewhere for the 600-kilowatt battery in that, is what I... I'm going to give them the benefit of it. I think Andy probably knows they will be.
Yeah, I think he's bound to, isn't he? But I think he was talking about, as you say, the trucks we see, passing here, bound for Glasgow.
Yeah, if they're at the limit already, then you're not. You know, there isn't room for what's a 600-kilowatt battery? Why do we reckon it's got to be?
Has to be.
Yeah.
And that's...
I need to think about that. I need to work that out, how much that would weigh. Might be. But it's a multiple of tons, isn't it?
Yeah, I would have thought...
detract.
Three or four tons.
Yeah, no, more than that, I would think. Yeah.
It's a lot.
So anyway, it's a fair bit.
You could imagine it being a good drive, couldn't you? Because of the low-end torque and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You should get there up the hills nicely.
Yeah, and as... I mean, Jamie says, the... trucks in London where there's a lot of stop start, so actually you get a lot of regeneration and bin trucks particularly, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
They also do those over at Lunaz, don't they? Have you been over there?
No.
I think one of our lads went over there recently to interview.
Yeah, someone did, didn't they? That's right.
Yeah, and they convert old bin lorries and other trucks and vans and stuff to electric. It makes a lot of sense for me.
It does.
You're just increasing the life cycle of, you know, because the chassis aren't going to wear out, but you're renewing the stuff that does wear out.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. So this week's pod is going to be a bit different. We usually chat vaguely about our columns, don't we? But we are now into the realm of the Christmas double issue number one.
Yeah.
Which is the 4th and 13th of December issue. Is it the 4th and 13th? Yeah, that's right. This pod comes out on the 4th of December.
Yeah.
But we have another pod on the 13th of December. And then we have another one on the 20th. Yeah. And then we have one on the 27th. So we've got 4 podcasts to the magazine's 2 issues.
Yeah.
Fortunately, well, Steve, what's coming on the 27th of December?
Well, I think the what's coming on the 27th is Mr. R. Hammond, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that the... we've been... well, yesterday we were in Bowers of Wales, weren't we? Talking to Richard Hammond about his business.
Yeah, the smallest
port. It wasn't Wales at all, was it? It was...
Oh, it's Herefordshire, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of on the...
It's close. It's close. Yeah.
Yeah, he loves it up there, and you can see why.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was very helpful, wasn't he? And we went to his place, had a look at his new classic car business, talked to him about life, the universe, and everything.
Yeah.
And quite a long one, isn't it? An hour or something?
Yeah, it's just under an hour, I think. Yeah, but it's really nice. He was great, I thought. He was very good company. He's very likable. It was, and he's interesting, isn't he? He's interesting. Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, I think you can see this is going to take over his life, isn't it? Because he's got, the business is also a kind of film film set, isn't
it? Yeah, there's a series on Discovery called Richard Hammond's Workshop.
Yeah.
And he's basically put the money, he sold half of his classic car collection, didn't he, to put the money up to buy a classic car workshop and employ people.
Yeah.
The people who looked after his cars.
Yeah.
And just
really nice guys as well.
They're really good, aren't they? Yeah, they're really great. Yeah. So it gets filmed for Discovery, plus it has to operate as a proper business at the same time.
I was impressed by the facilities.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of not having watched the Discovery program because I can't get it.
Yeah.
Because I'm too tight to buy the right kind of television. And but the place is great, isn't it? You know, really rather high tech.
Yeah, paint shop on site.
Yeah.
They can do, they do fabrication on site. It's a one-stop shop, as I think.
Yeah, and he's also, he's talking about, you know, producing cars that are worthy of concourse entries, isn't he? So I think it's going to be an interesting few years for the guy.
I reckon. Yeah, I reckon. And given, well, as we speak, the stories yesterday were that the Grand Tour is finito.
Yeah.
And they've had, it's come to, I mean, it always felt closer to its end than its start, of course, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So I think they've filmed, one or two more Grand Tour things already?
Yeah. I think there's one left, isn't there?
Yeah. I don't know when it runs next year. But anyway, that might be that. But anyway, after that, it seems he's got a thing. Anyway.
Well, I think his point was that it's difficult to say it's just running, it's completely ended because because Amazon is likely to have some sort of duties for all of them to, you know, they may dream up other programs.
Yeah. Anyway, that's on the 27th. Recommend it to you. There'll be another pod on the 20th where we are going to, no, sorry, yes, the 20th, where I think we will probably talk second double issue because there's 2 Christmas double issues. First one is off sale before Christmas. I always find that weird. But it's out today and it has the Christmas road test in it. And it has your festive column in, which is basically highlights from your year, isn't it?
Effectively. Yeah, it's the contents of my telephone.
Contents of your telephone from the year.
Yeah.
Which begins, as it should do, on New Year's Day. Actually, this is relevant to 2024 rather than just looking back to the start of 2023.
Yeah, very much
because
so.
Because there's a classic car day on New Year's Day at Brooklands.
Yeah. And interestingly, the missus is already saying, are we going to Brooklands on New Year's Day?
Because
I'd like to.
Yeah.
So it seems to be, it's pretty chilly, isn't it? And you don't last all day usually, but it's amazing to see what comes in and what people congregate around. The thing I remember very well from two things, previous times I went there in a Capri Brooklands, an actual...
Oh, really?
The last Capri, which was good fun.
Yeah.
Except another bloke showed up in one as well, which was annoying. But also, but I mean, he had far greater, you know, right to do it because he owned the damn thing. All I did was
actually had it.
But also, the other one was that I'll never forget. You know, there was this. Everybody and his mate has got a red Mini Cooper. He's, you know, is he going as Mini Cooper with stripes on the bonnet and all that? Lovely little cars and all that. But there are quite a few now. And then some bloke drove in a bog standard steel wheels Metro.
Oh,
you know, 1980 Metro, whatever it was. And there's the depth of the number of people who descended on this car just to look at the standard upholstery and the and the sort of lack of a sun visor and all that kind of stuff. So I can't get over how bog standard cars draw crowds these days, at least at places like that.
Yeah. Is it because of their scarcity, do you think?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, because it just wasn't considered to be special. And it fills you with nostalgia. I remember that car so well. I liked the Metro. I really liked it.
I never drove. Will I ever drive one? My university girlfriend had one. Champagne or beige, as I believe it's called.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever drove it. But it was very spacious, very roomy, you know, great visibility,
brilliant
but
packaging.
Very compact, well
Yeah,
packaged.
The glass started around about level with your hip bone and plenty of headroom and slightly mini-ish truck-like driving position, but better and pretty good handling, really. Mm. You know, you could hurl him into the roundabouts and so on.
Yeah.
It was pretty mini-like. And the A series engine or A plus, I think they called it, was for all the, you know, the insults people used to chuck at it for being related to the Morris Minor before the war and all that. I think anyway, it's an old engine.
It's an old motor. Yeah.
I always loved the A series, the way it burst into life. You would twist the key and it wouldn't do one revolution of the starter motor before it went vroom
into life. Coughed straight away into business.
I love the energy.
A torquey unit, wasn't it? I mean, it wasn't heavy or anything, but in terms of what people wanted from a small car at that time, it was ideal for it, wasn't it?
Indeed, yeah. It was kind of scuppered by the lack of a 5-speed box.
Oh, yes, of course.
But that, even the power, you know, the power plant was compact. Anyway, sorry, we've got the verbals, mate.
No, that's all right, mate. That's what we're here for. I'm just on the Brooklands Museum website now. So they're expecting 1,000 cars, winter barbecue and other catering outlets. And
do you have to book in these days?
Well, bring your Cherish Classic. All those pre-1994 are welcome to form the static display against the backdrop of our historic. So basically anything L prefix. Or earlier. Modern sports cars and supercars are welcome too. They have a dedicated parking area in the Heights. We advise you book your entry tickets in advance. So, and it's £24 for adults, students, seniors, 23, 21. So, which is the normal price for the museum. Is the rest of the museum open at the same
time? I think so. Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. So there's parking for old stuff, but then there's for all conventional, straightforward cars.
Yeah,
they have.
It's the variety that I love. Just ridiculous variety.
And it's nice that people get out on January 1st in a classic, which is not something you necessarily always do, but it just feels like it kicks off.
Yeah,
the year a bit.
Starts as you mean to go on.
Yeah, maybe I'll go.
Oh, it'd be good. Why don't you do that? It'd be great. I'll meet you over there.
Yeah.
I don't know what. We haven't got anything really old, but.
I don't have anything that I would be that confident making it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite as 100, maybe it's not. Maybe it's about 80 miles from me.
Yeah.
So I'm not that. Yeah, I might not bring anything classic.
Last year, I got really aerated about this because there was, you know, one of my early cars was a Hillman Minx, and there was one there just like it. I got overcome by nostalgia. Move on, said the missus.
You say move on. Maybe I'll come to this next week.
Yeah.
Let's do it now. There is a bit in your column. You were here later in the year, and your wife said, was she nearly going to bid on Fiat 600.
Oh, that's right.
850.
Yeah, her early car, her earliest car was a Fiat 600, and yeah. and it was very poorly bought. You know, you could see the road through the driver's floor and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she tells these tales about having to start it, park it on hills because the starter motor didn't work, and you had to kind of park it, get in, let the handbrake off, let it go.
get a headwind, but you know, get into it, get some speed up before dumping the clutch.
And it was in Liverpool, and that was a university car,
right.
And you know, she talks about going over the Pennines in this thing because she lived on the other side of the country. And, you know, breaking down in the snow and all kinds of, you know, things that were absolutely appalling now.
Yeah.
And at the time, they must have been pretty grim, but she remembers them with the utmost fondness. It's funny, isn't it?
It is weird, that, isn't it? Yes, I think of things fondly, but actually would have been miserable at the time.
Yeah.
But just, yes. I do like, I see quite a lot the convenience of a car that starts on the button and clears its screens and has a heated seat and everything else. It's just...
This Audi this morning, came here buried in the bowels of Wales, and it was really cold. And that's why I'm on, there's a Wales fetish, that's where I was, you know. Yeah. And I know it consumed power, but you turn on everything and suddenly the ice melts and it's beautiful.
Yeah. And they take, because they've got electric heaters on board, they take no heating, they don't rely on the engine to warm up first, do they? So they just...
Just do it.
I know it doesn't do very much.
You have lost 50 miles or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's that. But yes, so stop for a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Right, Steve and I are going to take a short break. We've yacked on so much, mate. I haven't quite finished the first half yet, but we should take a break, really, because we'll run over if we're not careful.
Okay.
Steve and I will be right back in just a moment.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. Visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Welcome back to My Week in Cars. Should we do the letter? The letter won't take long, so let's start with that. Peter Boutwood, there's two industry letters this week, Steve. Peter Boutwood from Noble Cars writes, because I know Noble reasonably well and have written about the M500. And we used to bang on about the M600 and how wonderful its ride and handling and steering were. Pete writes to say, I know Steve tends to write usually about some of the more accessible machines and always makes it clear he considers himself less capable than some of the speedier testers, very modestly, Steve. You do that very modestly. You go, I'll let you fellas.
Well, I think it's a fact of life. You know?
However, Pete says, we'd love to hear his thoughts on the M500, which is now nearing production. So, an invitation for you to go along and have a go.
Yeah, but why don't we both go?
Why don't we both go? Maybe record one of these up there.
Yeah.
Chat to Pete while we're there.
Yeah, talk to Pete. That'd be great.
That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
I think he deserves a lot of credit because he's stuck with it. He's sort of shown grit, and there he is still building cars. And good luck to him.
Yeah,
I'd love to do it. Where is he?
They're in Leicester.
Oh, well, that's easy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very easy.
I've got fond memories of all Nobles. Do you remember? You know, even the first one that came along to Autocar back in the day when it didn't look too good, but it was the M10.
Oh yeah,
But we kind of, along came Lee Noble, parked it in the yard, and we all walked around it and thought, doesn't look too good. And then we drove it and thought, God damn, you know, because he had this race history and so on, he just built a car that rode and handled really well, particularly rode well.
Yeah, well, that's the same
was the thing
with the M600 and now the 500 as well. They do ride, steer, handle really nicely.
I'd love to have a go.
So yeah, you should definitely do that.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So it's got the Ford 3.5 EcoBoost rather than the now very rare and one would think rather expensive. They had that Yamaha Volvo 4.4 V8 that they sent off to get turbocharged and tweaked and manipulated in quite heavy ways. So it's quite, that was quite an expensive,
expensive
unit. Whereas the Ford unit off the shelf is already turbocharged. You just turn it up a bit.
So it does have a sort of increased output, does it?
It's got less than the, I think it's less than the M600 had from memory, because they turned up the 600 to like 650 horsepower in total.
Yeah.
You could. It had three switches on it. It's a little three, I forget what the modes were, maybe like 500, 600, 650 through, if you, as you switched through power modes. And this Ford unit doesn't make that much from memory. Maybe it makes 500. Anyway, the short of it is, it still drives really
Sounds like it's plenty. Yeah.
It's plenty. And it drives really nicely. So yeah, let's go up there in the new year and do that. So thank you for your letter, Pete. Yes, in short, that would be great. Also, announced this week, but is relevant to your column, because you mentioned a couple of cars you spotted at Goodwood's preview day, I think, in the start of last season. Hang on a sec, I've got to find it in the column here. Lotus 25 and BRM V16.
Oh, God.
But it's relevant also this week, because Goodwood has announced this week that next year's races will all be on sustainable fuel.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah. It's amazing to me that just a minute ago, Paddy Lowe, who runs, what's his company called?
Zero Fuels?
Zero Fuels, yeah. Something like
that. Yeah. They're next door to where we are now.
Of course they are. Yeah. He's probably in there.
He probably is. Knock on the door, mate. He's probably extracting a test tube full of hydrogen-derived diesel as we speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he used to just carry around this file in his, PHIAL, in his pocket, didn't he? And now they're talking about fueling up, dozens, if not hundreds of cars on one day. So I don't know that it's all him. I'm sure there
are. I don't know. Goodwood hasn't said, I don't think, which sustainable fuels they are using next year. It may still be up for discussion and negotiation. Yeah.
Involve all of them.
Maybe it will.
And that'd probably be sensible too, wouldn't it?
Because wouldn't it? Yeah.
But it does, it's just another thing that's gaining momentum faster than you can think about it.
Mm.
It's such an era for being open-minded, isn't it? If you can be.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really, really exciting era, I think.
It is. Are you keeping up with it? Okay.
No.
Good. It's not just me.
Well, look, the thing that's good about our racket, though, isn't it, is that you get into conversation with people and they sort of update you, even if it's just the headlines.
Yeah.
I tell you what my missus does for me, and that is because she's an extremely excellent researcher, always has been.
Mm.
She just spots things in the press and in the papers particularly and sends them to me just as a fire. And so So when I'm having a coffee somewhere and just wasting time, I have a peep on, and suddenly there'll be three or four things in my
inbox.
Yeah, inbox. I find it really helpful.
Yeah, yeah. I did see Zero. I think it's Zero Fuels, isn't it?
I did
come up in the middle of the year to hear about it, and I think they were talking about getting 30 litres a day in this facility they got here, as they sort of ramp up the production of it. And this is one of these, there's various ways of getting sort of sustainable in the quotes, sustainable fuels.
Yeah.
You can get a biofuel, can't you, which is a fairly sort of conventional way of doing it. Or you can do this thing where you are cracking hydrogen, you're generating hydrogen greenly, and then you're cracking it.
Yeah.
You get the fuel out of it that way. And for stuff like big shipping, and aviation, and as we were talking about earlier, trucks which are already at the top end
of
the weight thing, or they're doing a long distance, you're not going to run those on batteries.
No.
So what are you going to do? So you've got to run them sustainably somewhere. And they're not going anywhere. We're not going to stop flying places
or
buying stuff from China. So what are you going to do? You've got to do it somehow.
And when you think of it, it's such a mammoth market. I mean, imagine just fueling one ship to go across the world.
Yeah. There was I saw on one of the, I saw on Instagram yesterday, somebody had just, I'm going to look up the exact weight because it's interesting, but I think there was a world record shipping weight of container ship, which is making its way across one of the oceans at the moment. And it is carrying, my internet is just slow. Here we go. A record load of 21,954 TEU. I'm going to look up what TEU means, but I think that's I think that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
On one ship. On one ship. And it is going...
Presumably it's not, you're not sort of cushions and Panama hats. It must
you would
be.
Think not. Yeah, that's from Singapore to Rotterdam. That was going.
Wow.
And it's this enormous ship called One Integrity.
God.
So, I mean, at the moment, that's burning diesel.
I hope that,
There'll come a point where that's not burning diesel.
Yeah.
But we still want to move that sort of stuff.
One of the things, the alarming things, is that they tend to, there's always stories about people sort of washing out tanks in the middle of the Pacific.
Flushing them out in the ocean. Stuff, yeah, which is not so good. You wouldn't think.
Can't do that with your hydrogen, can you?
We did the Christmas Road test a few years back on HMS Bulwark, which is a Royal Navy support ship.
Oh, I forgot. That's right. That's one of these ones with a cunning new hull.
It's got landing craft in the back. It's a big landing craft in the back and a big open deck in the back. And then it's got four little landing craft on the side. I forget what they call it, but it's just a sort of support supply ship. And it's got enough fuel to go to basically the South Atlantic and do something useful when it gets there.
Yeah.
That's the idea. It was designed, I think, in the 80s or 90s or whatever. So it was designed to have a decent range. But they've got separate fuel tanks all round. And the captain was saying, what we do is if we come across a fuel ship, basically any of our allies, NATO allies, or not even NATO allies, and we come across a fuel tanker, we top up the fuel tanks at sea. And it's just an open thing. If you see somebody else's Navy and they've got a fuel tanker, you just go, can we have some fuel? And they go, yeah, of course. And they all just share it around in a very open, liberal, easy fashion of just getting. He said, we love Japanese fuel tankers. Because the fuel quality is excellent. But they put them in a separate tank just in case you get dodgy fuel, and then it's all filtered out separately. So you might fill up from one tanker, they'll fill up,
how interesting.
And then they filter it. And he said, Greek fuel, not so good. Japanese, fantastic. It's just amazing that that's where they go. But they try and do it on the move rather than in dock.
Isn't that a great a sort of practical demonstration of sort of international cooperation?
Isn't it?
There's all this kind of tension that, if you read the headlines, you kind of worry about, you know, X not getting on with Y. But in the meantime, the people who actually have to do stuff,
they all
cooperate. I love that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. It's a bit like our magazine business sometimes, too.
Yeah.
Where we see our deadly rivals out on a job and they go, oh, we could just do with a hand to do some car-to-car tracking. And
you go,
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there'll be somebody up there upstairs thinking, heck, these people, I despise these people. They go, yeah, it's fine, don't worry.
Yeah, but
Christmas road test this year is a Pelican of London tall ship.
Amazing.
Should we talk about that next week?
Yeah.
So we'll do that.
Exciting stuff, though. There's a lot to talk about, isn't there? All I've done is see the pics. I don't think I've even seen
it's cool.
The magazine yet.
It's really interesting. Really fascinating.
No, I want to hear all about that, mate.
But I want to talk. Crikey, time is cracking on. Sorry, mate. I want to talk to one person who decided that he was not keeping up with the motoring world, who you saw at Le Mans this year, is Akio Toyoda, who at some point, was it this year, just decided?
Yeah, just recently. He's done several things. He's stopped being a kind of, a mover and shaker at Toyota. He's still clearly on the boards and, you know, possessor of the surname and all that kind of thing. But apparently he's just doing less. And he's also reversed out of JAMA, which is the Japanese SMMT.
Oh, okay.
I think he was the boss of that. But the thing that intrigues me is that I was at Le Mans earlier this year and I was in the press conference before the race where he appeared to promise in the next couple of years a hydrogen-powered Le Mans car.
Oh, interesting.
And in the meantime, Toyota stopped of saying that the Mirai program isn't going to prosper.
Mm.
And you slightly wonder whether, you know, there have been plenty of headlines saying Toyota ditches hydrogen. I'm not sure if it's quite as...
I don't think it's as... Because I saw a couple of days after that, somebody from Toyota Europe going, here's our new hydrogen I've seen the headlines, but here's our new hydrogen project.
Okay.
So
maybe there will be a...
There is something else.
I was just wondering whether this was going to prosper because Akio didn't quite have the traction in the company used to have.
You know, maybe, yeah. So he told, as we reported, he said, because of my strong passion for cars, I am an old-fashioned person in regards to digitalization, electric vehicles and connected cars. I cannot go beyond being a car guy, and that is my limitation.
Yeah.
He said in... I think he said that last.
What a great bloke he is,
January. But yeah,
he's a special person. I think it's funny that he seems so youthful that you know I can't quite tune into him retiring or at least stepping back.
No, it's funny, isn't it?
But I guess you know it's always the same in these fast moving companies. There just has to be a fresh blood all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's quickly, before we close, should we talk Mike Holland very briefly?
Yeah.
So you inspired this, mate, because you said last week that Mercedes had, back in the day, they had an advert slogan which was engineered like no other car.
That's it.
And I thought, yeah, they did. When did they have that? And it turned out that they had had it since. It was first mentioned in promotional copy in 1956, advertising copy, just somewhere in it. And then somebody at a later date had obviously seen it and gone, that's a good line.
Yeah.
Engineered like no other car in the world. Let's use that. And at the time, it was probably true. And, you know, so they used it until the mid-1990s, till 95.
Yeah.
And the other two, but if you go searching for it now, you won't, like, there was one page on the... yeah, if you search it now, they don't use it anywhere. And then they moved to the best or nothing, which you thought was not quite such a great line.
Well, it just doesn't have the impact.
No. And there is one page on the Mercedes-Benz USA website that uses the best or nothing.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's not used at the end of their TV adverts and stuff that I could see either. And they've got stuff like So AMG, which doesn't mean anything at all.
No.
If they think it's not important, BMW, the ultimate driving machine in the UK and the US, or overseas, they call it Freud am Fahren, which is sheer driving pleasure, which they've used since the 60s and are still using. And Audi's Vorsprung der Technik, which progressed through technology, which they're still using 50-odd years after it came out.
Yeah. I think it's valuable.
I think it's valuable. And it just occurs to me that I wonder if sometimes people listen too much to creatives who come in and say, it's a great idea. We're going to have a new slogan that's going to mean different things. We're going to have a complete reboot. And they all get quite excited within the company. And as creatives, we understand what that is like.
Yeah.
You know, you get, you know, people, if somebody says to us, do you want to rewrite the website copy that's already there and add a thing about that new engine? Or do you want to write a standalone first.
Put the power on the job.
Of course I want to write 600 of my own words. Yeah. But actually, there's somebody just needs to say, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it. Nobody outside this company cares what you think. Nobody, we all get excited about the brand. We all believe in the brand. We all know what it means. We all know we're changing direction slightly. The customer doesn't give a monkeys. They don't care. They don't think about brands day to day. It is not on their radar.
No.
So just tell them one thing. Tell them the same thing. And keep telling them for decades. And eventually they'll go, oh yeah, of course opal fruits make your mouth water.
Yeah, the irony to me is that
gives you wings or you should have gone to Specsavers.
That's it.
And just that's it. You just have to associate one thing with that and stick with it.
Can you imagine changing that one? You know, you should have gone to Specsavers. That is so damn effective, isn't it?
And you've got people at football matches shouting at referees. Yeah. It's just, it has become one of those rare advertising things that enters the general vernacular, like a Marmite car, you know, because you love or hate it, you know, if you find a formula that works like that, it would be, why would you stop using it? Why would you throw it away?
Yeah.
Why would
Engineered, the reason I realized why I'm so obsessed with engineered like no other car, because for one thing, I think Mercedes, I mean, other cars are very good now, of course they are, but I think they can still make a case for it. For a start.
Do you reckon?
I do.
Do you think so?
I do.
I'm interested to find out this.
I don't say they're better, but I think, you know, it's just a way of saying we're unique, I think. But the other thing is I now realise that there was a bloke, Robbo told me this, Peter Robinson, mm-hmm. my mentor and best friend in Australia, world's greatest motoring journalist.
Yeah.
He talked a lot about this bloke called Bruce McCall, who was a very clever American advertising bloke, wrote some extraordinary dopey books about, proposing daft cars. He was a humorist as well. Mm. But he was very much involved in copywriting for Mercedes-Benz. And he produced this fantastic brochure, a copy of which Robbo gave me, and it's disappeared into all the junk I've got at home. But it was called The Value of the Difference. And that if you wanted to read a brilliant piece of copywriting that was, very plainly biased in favor of Mercedes-Benz and making the case for Mercedes-Benz, but the way it was framed and the language used and it was irresistible. I always want to find it and I don't know where to look. That's a trouble. I've got so much crap.
But it's there somewhere, is it? It's somewhere.
Yeah, I've got it. Somewhere. I've got it. It doesn't sound like it, but it's a prized possession. And I wish I could find it just to, because in the olden days when I had it, I used to read people paragraphs from Bruce McCall and because we think of advertising copy as, I'm not sure if bollocks is allowed on this, but
yeah, I think it's fine. It's
but it is, it doesn't work very well. A lot of it, it's puff.
Mm.
It's sort of space occupation almost, but Bruce McCall's way of writing, partial copy was absolutely brilliant. I know, it's just sort of worthy of study almost.
It must be difficult to be given the gig of advertising an established brand and knowing you are not going to reach the heights that somebody has before because they've done it for 50, because somebody set the tone for that brand 50 years ago. So you can understand why somebody would want to try and do better or do different or whatever.
But yeah.
It just comes a point you've just got to put the ego down and go, that's not...
Well, I think you've got to be very, very sure that chucking out what you already have, which is admirable, is worth doing. You know, lots of people just sweep in and say, I've had a new idea. I'm new.
Yeah, new brain.
Let's be... It doesn't work always.
No.
Especially in the automotive business where tradition is valued. People who haven't got tradition want some.
Desperate for it. Yeah, desperate for it. Yeah. Right, that brings us to the end of pod 65, I think. And so the 4th of December to the 13th, Steve and I will be back this time next week with more from the Christmas Road Test. Steve's, the latter half of Steve's column from this issue. And then we'll talk the second double issue next time.
The Christmas Road Test, it needs to be said, is a very large project that you did yourself personally, didn't you?
It is my gig. Every year it is my gig. So I start worrying about it in January and then this year was fine because we kind of already had it in the bag, which I'm pleased about. And it works best when somebody who knows the bag and understands it gets in touch and says, have you considered something that I know a lot about and can give you access to? Yes, this is perfect.
And I can say, having seen only seen the proofs, but heard a lot, it is fabulous.
The pictures are mega. The pictures are fantastic. So we sailed from, I'll tell you next week, but we sailed around the south coast a bit and in the
had some adventures.
And it was super. So more on that next week. Meantime, you can find us over at autocar.co.uk. If you leave this podcast open near a loved one, like you might leave a magazine advert for a watch on the table open casually in the hope that they might take the hint, they can go to themagazineshop.com and set you up with a subscription to the magazine, which includes the full Autocar archive too. Until next week. Thanks, Steve.
See you later, mate.
See you, mate.